This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Colonel Mike Edmondson, the 25th Superintendent of the Louisiana State Police, in the news of late regarding his retirement package and a legislative action at the close of the session. We will talk with him about that and much more, including crime in Louisiana and a crisis in New Orleans with Mayor Mitch Landrieu asking for reinforcement from state police. Mike Edmondson on deck. Also on the show today is John Wirth, the entertainment editor of the Baton Rouge Advocate. A lot of summer concerts going on, and we'll talk with John Wirth about some of the music and the movies that are permeating our community. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett producing, and your numbers, 877-217-5757, wherever you are inside the city of Baton Rouge, 297-5633. And if you're inclined to correspond online, inkstershow@wrkf.org. With us is the gentleman who's headed state police during the tenure of Governor Bobby Jindal, Mike Edmondson. Colonel Edmondson's been with state police for, 34 years.
You and I started together.
Yeah, we were in school together, and you've gone on to bigger and better things, and you've been in the news the last week. It's been a tough week.
Well, I think it's part of working at a level that I'm working at. You know, I understand that these things happen, and I think when you look at the situation itself and you look at the session, the legislation, I think it was unfortunate the way it came out at the end. But I think you have to look at the fact for 34 years as a Louisiana trooper, I paid into a retirement system. Back in my system, 15 or so years ago at age 50, I was forced at that time to either go into the drop program or you lose it.
Now, wait a minute. You said how many years ago?
15 years ago.
Well, you weren't 50 years old 15 years ago.
No.
40, so, when you turned 40.
40.
Okay.
And it was actually in my 25th year, or age 50, whatever comes first. Well, my 25th year came before that. I started when I was 21. So subsequently, that has been changed. That's not even in existence anymore. We don't have the ability where you force people into a program. So as a major for 2 years and then as certainly a superintendent for over 7 years, I've been paying into a retirement system that I don't even have any benefits for. So coming into this program, and certainly my staff said, here's a piece of legislation where, and each year they look at legislation for any people that are currently on the job where you can make adjustments within the retirement system, and this was certainly no exception. And the ability was there. I said, look, if it can fix that, if it can help the other trooper, because I'm the longest serving trooper into the system. We had one other that's been there over 32 years that's also been paying in a program that he was not benefiting from. So this actually brings it into it. It doesn't give me any more or less benefit than a trooper that's currently involved in it. It allows me to retire at the rank that I'm at into a retirement system that I've been paying into. I cannot get $1 more than than what I'm making. So some of the early reports that came out said this is going to give him a retirement plus an additional $30,000. That was just not true. Now, they didn't correct that. They just didn't say it anymore. But that is not true. And let me tell you something. This legislation does not negatively affect any benefits of any retiring officer. If it comes back and shows that it negatively affects any person in this system, I will not take it. If it comes back and said this was improper, it's not legal, it's not constitutionally sound, Jim, I'm not going to take it. Keep in mind, I have not retired yet. I have no intention of retiring. I'm going to serve out the term of Governor Bobby Jindal and look at what my options are at that point. And so we're not talking about a retirement or anything. I'm going to get for at least another year and a half. So we have plenty of time to look at this, plenty of time. I think it's in the proper process to let the retirement system review it. Attorneys will do that. They'll look at it to make sure, as they do any type of retirement legislation. But I think the bottom line is, if there's anything improper about it, I'm not going to take it. That's not part of who I am. But a chance to affect the men and women that are working in this department every single day to make sure their retirement benefits are sound and protected, I'm all for that.
Okay, well, the story from the Advocate, the initial one from Michelle Milholland, reads, on the final day of the 2014 session, lawmakers signed off on a measure that creates bigger retirement pay for two people, State Police Colonel Mike Edmondson and a lower-ranking state trooper. You're saying it's not really an increase based on retirement benefits that are uniform, but you were in a different system. This gives you the retirement benefits that would be accorded to those in the current system. But I think the big complaint, if you will, from people like John Kennedy is that the Senate Bill 294 was kind of a 11th hour measure, last day of the session. Wasn't a whole lot of discussion about it. Did you know about this bill long before, or was this something that was just foisted upon the legislature?
No, this was, I guess, about two or so weeks prior to that when the legislation was there to actually fix this, and especially when I saw there was another person into it. I'm the longest-serving member in our retirement system right now as an active member, so I've been paying into it. This other trooper was paying into it, so I certainly understand the fact that when you come into it, especially the last possible day like that, and unfortunate side is the legislature works up until sign or die, up until the moment they sign off for the legislative session. These type of conference committees are part of the process. Mm-hmm. We followed that process. It is unfortunate that it happened on the last day. I don't think that was the intention and intent part of it, but it did. And I understand how that looks. But if I thought it was something that I had not earned, if I thought it was something that was not available, if I didn't think that I'd been paying into benefits of which at some point I get to retire at what I've served at and what I've paid into, the bottom line, I was paying a percentage of my retirement, percentage of my income into a retirement system that I wasn't even in. So I would be fighting for anyone. If you know anything about me, Jim, and you do, for the last 7 years as superintendent, I was at that table every year during the legislative process, fighting for our retiree benefits. They got a COLA this year, which they more than deserve. I see what they're having to work with. So I'm all about trying to protect, trying to enhance those retirees and those people that are currently on the job to make sure that they get everything they're supposed to get and what they're entitled to. But the bottom line is this, and this was being said in there, that it affects or impacts the benefits of retirees. That's just not accurate. It does not. This particular benefit is paid out of the dividends that are paid, which I pay into, and I've been paying into, and paying it at a higher rate than of any retirement system I was even going to be in. This only brings me the level of where the other troopers are, something that I would fight for every single one of them. So I think that's the biggest part of it. It's unfortunate when news outside of the mainstream gets put out on the internet and it doesn't have accurate information into it. These people that we're putting out, and these are people that I know and talk to. I mean, mm-hmm. They'll call me on minuscule things sometimes. I don't know why they couldn't have called me on this and said, hey, I'm going to write a story. They're going to write it, and I understand that, but let's just have facts in it. Let's make sure the public, because I believe the public, you know I do. I've said it on your show. The public has a right to know. The public has a right to know exactly what's going on, and I believe let's find out before we write these stories, let's make sure they're accurate. Make mm-hmm. sure they're informative, but they're accurate, and they have information that the public can derive their own feelings from.
I've received several emails over the last few days from C.B. Forgotston. Did he talk with you at all?
No, he didn't. And look, I know C.B. I've got his cell phone number, and he's got mine. He calls me on license plates when he sees they're from out of state around the Capitol because he wants to make sure if they're working there, they ought to have Louisiana license plates. It's the law. I get that, and every time he calls me, I follow up on it, and I get back to him immediately. I don't know why he wouldn't have called me on this one. I certainly would have answered his questions, and I think he would have had more accuracy in his initial report. So I just believe if people are going to write something or report something, I think that they ought to get the facts from the beginning of it.
Well, Treasurer Kennedy, of course, is making a big deal of this. I see where John Bel Edwards, who's running for governor, is making a big deal of it. He'll be at the press club today, by the way, and he says he's calling for some kind of an investigation. How did the legislative process get involved in this? So what happened to make this a bill and to get it done by the end of the session?
Well, the legislation was available there throughout the retirement process in the legislature, and this was a piece that actually gave the ability to add into it to fix these two areas within the mm-hmm. retirement system. Two individuals that were paying into, myself and one other trooper, a 32-year trooper. I've been in it 34 years. So we're eligible for a retirement system. We're eligible for the benefits that any other trooper gets. So the language was added into it. At that particular time, my staff was working on it. They brought it to me. I said, if this is the process, if this is the way we should do it, if this is all how we're supposed to follow it, then I'm all for it. Let's go forward and let's make sure we take care of especially the 32-year trooper. And it also fixes my retirement system. So, again, the biggest part of it is I think there was some information that said, you know, you're going to get $30,000 more than you're making. Well, I'd be astounded by that, but it's not true. It's not accurate.
How much is it?
It's what my salary is of $134,000 a year. That's what I've been paying into for, as a colonel for 7 years, and that's what I earned as superintendent.
But the benefits, like when you retire,
benefits will be at whatever my salary is.
At your current salary. Yeah.
May even be a few dollars less than that. I haven't seen the final number yet.
And you earn $134,000 a year as the current.
Yes, sir.
And under the old system,
I actually retired as a captain.
Well, yeah, you would have.
Which is considerably less, and I would have never reached this. The unfortunate side of it is I've been paying into it. So
But if you were retiring at captain's pay, how much would that be?
I retired as a captain at that time. It was $79,000 a year.
Okay,
79 and some.
So we're really talking about $45,000 difference between a captain and.
Keep in mind when I came out of the drop, you go into a drop for 3 years, and when you come out, you start accruing more dollars. Okay, you still start earning a little more, but you'll never catch back up to where you are. And the part of the legislation, which is why that was changed back then, because it forced people to go and drop or you lost it. Well, that's an unfortunate benefit or not a benefit that you're entitled to and you're paying into. So it's a complicated issue. It's part of retirement, I think. But the bottom line is I've been paying into it for 34 years. If you look at where the retirement system is today, I would be eligible because I've more than attributed to where I get 100% of my salary. I've more than done that. So. That's what this legislation does. It brings it in line with what the process is currently, not what it was back then.
We'll get to some other matters with Colonel Edmondson, and there are many other matters to talk to, but you've been doing this for 34 years. Does it trouble you to have your integrity questioned?
Well, if you hear me talk, I always talk about that. I believe the most important thing on our uniform is this badge and the integrity that comes with it. I mean, I think that's an unquestioned part of who a police officer should be and what I believe that I am, and I know that I am. I know how I treat people. I know what I've done for people and I do for people every single day. I know the work that I put in, probably 70, 75 hours a week, and I've been doing that for 7 years. I've done that for my whole career. But yes, I think the integrity is the most important thing. This badge is something that you have to earn, something that's not just given to you. It's a privilege. It's not a right. And so that troubles me more than anything else because I understand what it comes with. I understand the expectation of it. But let me tell you something. It doesn't concern me from the integrity part because, let me tell you something, my troopers are my biggest concern. That is more important to me right now is not this issue that's been in the news the last couple of weeks. That's going to work itself out, and I believe we'll be fine with that. I know that I've done the right thing. I'm more concerned about my 50 troopers in New Orleans that are on the streets of New Orleans and what they've been doing. I'm more concerned about the heroin problem in Louisiana. I'm more concerned about the mentoring of our kids as they're growing up. I'm more concerned about the other things that's going on in law enforcement that affect who I think are our greatest assets, and that's our citizens. That's what I'm more concerned about, and that's why I hate the fact that we're pulling away from what the bigger picture ought to be, and that's what we're doing every single day in public safety and state police around the state of Louisiana.
Okay. Mike Wolf asked, did you technically retire when you entered the drop program?
I guess it's explaining what that is, but you do technically say that at that particular time it's called a retirement drop. Then you can come back out of it. At that time, it allows you still to come back out and continue working, but you still retired at that particular benefit. That's been changed. So it just so happens there's only two of us left. But that was changed not long afterwards where other people could actually, the drop wasn't a mandatory deal. You can actually look back 3 years in your career. You can actually look back at your salaries over the years before that. So the bottom line, there was two of us still in the system, a system that was no longer in existence. And what this legislation does is allow us to retire at where we are if we've paid into it. And we both have paid in over 30 years, me 34, he 32.
32. We'll return with Colonel Mike Edmondson after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A bit more time with Mike Edmondson, the head of state police for the entire 6.5 years that Governor Bobby Jindal has been in office. And Colonel Edmondson, I think for the most part, has received high marks for his work, but he has been in the news in the last week or so regarding a retirement benefit that was approved by the legislature in the waning moments of the session. The sponsor, J.P. Morrell, said, or he's quoted as saying, Colonel, he didn't realize he was boosting retirement pay. He thought it was fixing a problem for a number of law enforcement members, not just for you and the other trooper. I'll let you respond to that. What is Morrell getting at?
Well, I understand. I've not spoken to him, so I can't actually comment on anything he said because I've not spoken to him about it. But we followed the process. We followed exactly how it works. When it goes into a conference committee, which is part of the legislative session to move things through rapidly at the end. And then after that, it still goes on the full floor of the Senate and the full floor of the House for any questions or anything that comes up for that. So I understand that portion of it because it looks like it was rammed through at the last part of the session. But the bottom line is hundreds of things are moved through because that's part of the process. What was done by my staff and I fully supported and authorized him to go forward on it is the fact that we looked at legislation in 2003 because DROP was done away with after I went into it and came out of it. And what this legislation did was that it corrected 30-something members at a cost of $3.5 million.
That legislation was approved as well.
That was legislation approved. It did the exact same thing. It fixed it for those 33 people that were getting ready to retire that said, you know what, that forced drop was not something that should have been there. They did away with that. So it allowed those 30-something members to correct exactly what was done by this legislative session. And look, I've said that and I'll continue to say it. And in case somebody didn't hear it earlier, if this comes back and it's something that they say, you know, that was improper, it was unconstitutional, they won't have to worry about legislation, Jim. I'm not going to take it. If it adversely impacts my retirees, I'm not going to accept it. I'm not going to take it if it does that. Number one, it's not going to pay me a dollar more than I'm making. Nor is it going to pay me a dollar more than I've earned based on my time in the retirement system. That's all fixed by you know, all kinds of mathematical equations and all types of things the retirement system looks at. So I think that's what's most important to me is the fact that, because it is an integrity issue, and I want to make sure people understand that. If there's anything improper about it, I will not take it.
All right. Others, I would imagine, in other agencies got in the DROP program too. How are they affected? Do they have the same opportunity that you will have?
They will all have the same opportunity. Now, we're talking about the state police retirement system.
I'm talking about, like, if somebody, didn't the DROP program apply to people who work, say, in the Department of Health or some other place?
Yeah, it's a completely different retirement system, Jim. And so it's a different deal. I mean, they have different rules.
Okay.
So I'm just not knowledgeable.
And I'm learning a lot about state retirement.
Yeah, but you have several different retirement systems in the state, of which state police is one of them. It's a financially sound retirement system. It's done very well, that's okay. How that particular system.
Right.
But it's one strictly for state police.
Charles on North Foster. Charles, good morning. You're on with Colonel Edmondson.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Colonel.
Good morning, sir.
I'd like to shift gears with two quick questions. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay. My first question is, what proposal do you have on the table to increase African-American employment with Louisiana State Police? I remember when they were starting the DNA crime lab, and boy, I know some very qualified people who had Southern University on their resume, and I don't even think they got an interview.
All right.
Well, let me tell you something. That's extremely important to me when you look at diversity throughout the department, whether it's African Americans, whether it's Asian, whether it's Hispanic, whether it's females. And I've actually gone out and spoken at schools around the state to get these individuals in to make sure that they're filling out those applications. And I can assure you every single one of them that comes in and takes a test will be interviewed. Every single one of them will go through the system. And I personally look at every single name in making that final selection. So that's something that's extremely important to me. I believe when you look at state police, it ought to be an indication of who and what Louisiana is. It should affect all walks of life in Louisiana. And I encourage every single one of them I was at Southern University. My son's in his senior year at Cade. He's got one more semester. He's played baseball there for 4 years. So I'm around those programs. I'm around those individuals all the time, and I'm always seeking out. One of them's listening right now, but that I sought out recently and said, you look good in a state police uniform. You need to go take that test. And let me tell you something. That's important to me. So I appreciate that mm-hmm. question.
How many troopers do you have?
We have 955 troopers. If you look at the ratio as far as African-American, you're probably looking at about 20% of the ranks within state police.
20% African-American or thereabouts. Okay.
Which I believe is a low number, and I'm all about increasing
What is the starting pay for a state trooper? The
starting pay for a trooper is just under $36,000 a year. The pay raise that just went through legislation will move us to around 41, 42, mid-40s, maybe a little bit more than that, and then it'll increase it after 1 year.
So the lowest ranking state trooper makes about one third as much as the head of state police, and believe me, there's a bigger disparity than that in the private sector. But
I'm not the highest paid law enforcement official in the state. I think that's there's chiefs that make more. All the sheriffs make more than I do. Chief of police in New Orleans, which I'm down there mm-hmm. quite a bit, makes considerably more than I do. And I'm not complaining about that. You're not going to hear me complain about that. And that's not what's most important to me. But what's most important to me, if there's a system out there, if there's a discrepancy out there, that's important to me. But I can assure you, what we've been discussing so far this morning, that's not my biggest concern right now. It's my troopers out there and taking care of that. Now, I recall I had two questions. Did we get to a second one?
Let's see. Is Charles,
hey, Charles,
are you still there, Charles?
Get to your second question.
Yes, I'm still here. My second question is, I called and asked at Troop 8 if there was a law in Louisiana that prevented the state police from releasing a police officer's name who's involved in a shooting where someone is killed. And the officer told me he didn't know of any law. But when I asked him why are not officers' names released, he gave me no legal basis. So,
all right.
We will release him, Charles, and that's a very good question. That's in the news, unfortunately, quite a few times. We release the name generally about 24 hours afterwards. What we'd like to do in the first part of a situation like that, we want that trooper to have time with his family, with those around, and we want to make sure we get all the facts that we can immediately. That's a very critical moment in a shooting, that those first few hours. It's emotional and physical pull on an individual. But our policy, we usually release a name within 20 or after 24 hours.
Right, 297-5633. Rick Causey writes, I like the idea of state troopers assisting the NOPD. It gives troopers a chance to put all of the training to use in a more diverse police work other than traffic issues. Your response?
Well, let me tell you something. We are working traffic in the New Orleans area. We're throughout the city. You know, they asked for 100. I can't bring 100 troopers to New Orleans. Because number one, I'm not getting any additional dollars in my budget. This is all being handled in my current budget. But let me tell you, it's important that New Orleans succeed. That's where people from around the world want to go. Look, we were just voted as the happiest place in the United States to live in Louisiana. What a great honor for that. But let's make sure the people that come visit Louisiana, and particularly they go into New Orleans, we know what the rest of the state has to offer. We know that New Orleans is the gateway to the rest of the state. So I want to make sure that we do the things and we respond effectively. Troopers do a lot more than traffic. We're state police. Narcotics, detectives, intelligence, all the inspection of all forms of transportation in Louisiana, all of gaming is under me, all of which is the enforcement side of it, the fire marshal's office, Office of Motor Vehicles, all the DNA, the crime lab, those things, that's all under me. So it's far more than that. And a lot of people do say, well, troopers are just out on the road. That's just where they see us the most. But believe me, we're supporting law enforcement. Partnerships are at its finest hour in Louisiana. Every day I speak to sheriffs and chiefs from around the state, and we work together. I think that's not only an expectation of the public, that's what they demand from us, and we're doing that every single day. So mm-hmm. I'm going to make sure we're in New Orleans. I'm going to make sure that we're doing the things we need to do on a daily basis. 45 troopers work in the city of New Orleans. So I've taken half of those and redeployed them. But gaming, intelligence, working with the FBI, with the DEA, with ATF, with the Marshal's Office, with the task forces, with the City of New Orleans, with Newell Norman, working with him and Jefferson Parish on some task forces, human trafficking. All those things are an important part of it. We're doing that every single day.
All right. Are you going to run for Lieutenant Governor?
Look, we talked about that last time, Jim, and I'm flattered by that. That is honest. I mean, people come up and ask me, and I'm saying, you know, that tells me I'm doing a good job. That tells me my 34 years have really meant something. Look at the phone calls that are coming in. It's people saying that, you know, they want you to continue to do the things you do. That's what makes me feel good. That is not on my radar right now. I want to finish my time of service in the Louisiana State Police. I want to see what God has in offer and in store for me after that. I know I'm far from through. I love law enforcement. I love marketing Louisiana. So when you talk about something like that, that's what that person does. That'd be something to really look at. But that is not something that I'm considering right now. But I'm blessed that somebody would ask that.
You're not ruling it out, though.
Yeah. I'm certainly not ruling anything out, but I don't know that I want to be in politics. I don't know, because I think Louisiana. You talk to the public, and I speak to them all the time. I'm all over the state. I think it, you're better as a supervisor when you're involved in what's going on, because I want to be a part of the community, not apart from it. But you listen to them, and why would anybody want to run for office when you know it just doesn't seem fun? I mean, when's the last time you saw an election where the public was excited about election? Wouldn't that be fun? It just seems like you get into it and it's a lot of mudslinging, a lot of why. Well, who you're running against? Why aren't you running for a job? I'm not running against somebody. I'm running for a position, and this is why I want it. I mean, I want the public to feel good about somebody, and they go, you know what? I want to get behind that person, regardless of who it is. But no, that's not something I'm considering right now.
Well, our mutual friend Edwin Edwards is running again. He can't get enough of it.
Yes, sir. I'm glad we live in a society where everyone can walk out and do those types of things, and let's leave it to the public. But let's give the public the issues. Let's let the public learn about a person, not learn why about somebody else. If I'm running for an office, I'm going to be running for that office. I'm not running against somebody. And they had to look at that person's issues. They had to look at that person, what their background is, what they stand for, who they are. Because let me tell you something. The true person is when no one's looking. Okay. The true person is that does something for somebody that can do nothing for them. That's what I want to be judged by.
Deborah on Highland. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air with Colonel Mike Edmondson.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a retired teacher. Completed drop with 33 years experience. I'm a member of Teacher Retirement System, very solvent, just as your retirement system is. I have returned to work. This is going to be my 10th year. I have made contributions these years that I have returned. I think I deserve the same benefit that you're getting. Will efforts be made so that, since now I am at a higher salary, I can have my retirement adjusted. And
all right, that's
look. I think it's
a
great
question.
Let me tell you something. First of all, thank you for what you've done as a teacher and the service you provided to whoever you taught. I don't know what grade you've taught, but I can assure you that I appreciate what you've done. And to be able to come out of retirement, obviously you retire, that means you got your retirement, you're getting paid that, and you're working again, so you've got two incomes coming in. I think that's a great thing, but absolutely, I think you ought to be entitled to everything that you've paid into. And if you've paid into a system, and you ought to reap the benefits of paying into that system based on your time of service. Keep in mind, when I retire as a captain, I'm not getting a paycheck for that. I'm still in the same position, and I've been paying into that retirement. So you should absolutely get every benefit, and your system should be working to pay you or any members like you every benefit that you can based on your years of service.
All right. A couple of other questions. How bad is the situation in New Orleans as far as crime?
Well, I think if you look at overall crime in New Orleans, it has gone down. The unfortunate side of it, and what happened several weeks ago on Bourbon Street, is it happened on Bourbon Street. I mean, the world looks at that. I mean, they almost think the French Quarter is New Orleans. And you and I know it's not New Orleans. There's so much more to that city and that region of the state that we want people to go to. But it did. It happened on the most visible street on earth. And the bottom line is, arrests were made on that, and OPD has done the things they need to do. I think by us coming in and assisting them through Labor Day, it allows them to do other things in that city that needs to be done. It allows us to bring into an area, whether it's because we're not just in the French Quarter. We're in the Bywater. We're in the Mirny. We're in Frenchman area. We're all over. And let me just say what we've done. We've been there almost 2 weeks. We made almost 150 arrests. We've made 72 drug charges. We've taken 6 guns off the street. 3 of them were illegal. We've provided presence so that New Orleans could spread out and do the things they need to. Their numbers are not where they need to be. They're trying to hire additional people. I talk to Chief Surpass probably every other day. He and I have a great relationship. Mayor Landrieu is a personal friend of mine. We talk all the time. So this is a partnership. This is a shining moment for law enforcement in New Orleans. And let me tell you, the rest of the country is looking at it. I was in Washington, D.C. last week. One of the questions out of a police chief from a major city and a head of the state police from another state that said, Colonel, how are y'all doing that in Louisiana? How are the sheriffs, the chiefs, and the state police working together and they get along? I said, because it's important that we sat down and we did those things. It's not happening in other parts of the country. So New Orleans certainly has a way to go. Baton Rouge, we're working a lot with them. And the unfortunate side of it, when you look per capita, when you look at the number of individuals that are involved in probation and parole in Louisiana, it's staggering numbers. When you look at the number of people that are incarcerated in Louisiana, more so than any other state in the country, that's why it's so important that we start mentoring kids at early ages. That's where we've got to be part of the educational process. That's why when things are happening, we ought to be in a proactive role. And 7 years ago in state police, I said, you know what, we're not going to be reactive. We're going to be proactive. We're going to be engaged in the community. We're going to be inside the schools. I've got a trooper on a daily basis, Jim, that reads books to kids in school. They slide into a school. They don't need to be told. They just do it. They go into a first grade, second grade, third grade, kindergarten, preschool, and they read a book to those kids.
We're short on time with the Colonel, but another question, and it's a good one. What about heroin?
Heroin is something that every parent ought to be concerned about. The numbers are rising daily. And why we're seeing these needles still stuck in the kids' arm is because the purity of heroin that used to be around 10 to 12% is 40% and higher. And we're working very closely with DEA. I've been to the border in Texas with my counterpart, Steve McCraw, superintendent in Texas. We've rode on the Rio Grande where the drugs are coming in from South America. Parents, you need to be talking to your kids. Here's the bottom line, and I've learned this. If you're not involved in your kid's life, somebody else is. If you're not answering the questions, somebody else is giving answers, and it ought to be the parents doing that. We ought to be involved in it. This BRAVE program that Hiller Moore and the sheriff, Sid Gautreau, and the mayor is all behind, right. Baton Rouge, Kip Holden. That's an incredible program that the rest of the country is looking at. Let's go and talk to the people who live here. Give them a chance to make an honest dollar. Give them a chance to have education. Get them off the streets and into the workplace, into our schools, because that's where you make a difference in Louisiana.
And you're heading to Delaware in a few weeks. Nationally acclaimed situation here?
Yes, sir. It's more of a lifetime achievement in law enforcement. It recognized leadership role and what we've done in partnerships in Louisiana. Very proud to accept that as a member of the Louisiana All State right. Police. I'm Thank still
you.
A trooper.
There you go. Thank you, Mike Edmondson. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we switch gears, and we're joined by John Wirth, the entertainment editor for the Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and Acadiana Advocate. Good morning to you, John.
Hi, Jim. That was a great conversation. I enjoyed Colonel Edmondson.
Well, and times have been challenging for him in the last week or so.
Yes.
We thank people for coming on when the heat is on. Most people don't.
Some very prominent people do not confront questions.
Sometimes they don't come on when the heat is not on.
Yeah.
But Colonel Edmondson's a direct guy, and it's one of those things. I'm not sure if for some that he could give any answer that would be satisfactory, but he wanted to make his case, and he did. Now, you have been on the entertainment scene in this area for how long now, John?
Since 92. I got here 92. In September of 92.
22 years for John Wirt.
Just about.
And last night, we had Bruce Frampton and the Doobie Brothers, right?
Peter Frampton.
Yeah, Peter Frampton.
And I want to say, I learned about this John George's Peter Frampton connection from listening to your show. Mm-hmm. You brought it up someday, and I don't remember the context exactly, but it had to be John George's related.
Yeah, well, he saved Peter Frampton's life, and Peter Frampton was actually billed ahead of the Doobie Brothers. Did you see the concert?
I didn't make it. We did so much coverage, pre-coverage. I kind of thought if we did more, it would be overkill.
Okay. But you talked to John George's about how at the age of 17, he saved the life of a guy who was already a rock and roll superstar, Peter Frampton. It was an unusual occurrence.
1978, and Peter Frampton was one of the biggest stars in rock and pop music in the world at that time. So, and yes, John George's was 17, and he was staying in the Bahamas, and Peter Frampton had a very serious auto accident, and it was so noisy it woke people up in the area, and John George's ran out and helped the very seriously injured Peter Frampton.
And Peter Frampton says John George's saved his life.
And John George's, I didn't actually talk to John about this because he was away on vacation, and he said he didn't have phone reception, but he had email. So we had an email correspondence, and I basically asked John George's what, your side of the story. And, Mr. George's said that he didn't really think he saved Peter Frampton's life, but Peter Frampton says he did.
Mm-hmm. He says he owes his life to John George's, so I think that's rather clear. And John George's is now your boss, and we're glad that John Word is still a member of The Advocate. Some good people left, but many of the great ones are still around, including my friend Smiley Anders.
Smiley
and John
Anders,
Word.
The perpetual Smiley
there
Anders.
There you go. There you go. But this has been quite a season for music. You wrote eloquently and elegantly about Prince and his concert on the 4th of July. How was he?
Prince was the main event, certainly at the Essence Festival, and it was the biggest Essence Festival in history, 550,000 attendees, or I think that's the figure I saw in the AP story.
550,000, wow. In a city with 25,000 hotel rooms, so
20th anniversary of the Essence Festival, so they wanted it to be special, and getting Prince there on Saturday night was, as I say, the main event. And I have to say that Lionel Richie on the Sunday night was quite anticlimactic. In fact, I don't know exactly why, but the place, the Superdome, that's where it took place, the Superdome basically became nearly empty by the time Lionel Richie finished up his set. People were leaving throughout, but this is not unusual. This happens at the Essence Festival on Sunday night because it ran from Thursday through Sunday, and people are tired, or people are exhausted, or maybe there was just no Lionel Richie just couldn't hold him. I don't know, but that's what happened.
But Prince did not disappoint.
Prince had the place full, and people loved seeing Prince. And last year, Beyonce was the big act at Essence Festival. Mm-hmm.
Paul McCartney, he was supposed to be here last month, and he didn't show
up. Well, he got seriously ill with a virus of some kind. He was in Japan. He was getting ready to play his Japanese dates, and he fell ill. He is 72 years old, I believe.
Yeah, in fact, he was going to perform a day after his 72nd birthday, and he has rescheduled for October.
In New Orleans.
In New Orleans at the
October 11th.
The Smoothie King Arena, I've been corrected, so let's not.
No, the Smoothie King Center.
Okay. All right, the Smoothie King Center.
Yeah, that takes some getting used to.
All right, but that's the name of it. Now, Steely Dan coming to, I think he's coming to UNO, isn't he? Lakefront Arena, or being the...
Saturday, July 26th.
The two members
Steely Dan. Is the two guys who have been the principal songwriters in the
Becker
group.
Becker and Fagan, right?
Donald Fagan and Walter Becker.
Yeah. They're coming Saturday. To UNO.
UNO
I would imagine
front.
It'll be a sold-out arena for all the people of our vintage who are reliving their wayward youth.
I've heard a lot of people are interested, and some people at the newspaper, for instance, are really excited about going. So, that should be a special show. I saw Paul Simon in the UNO Lakefront Arena in 2011. That was a great show. So it's a nice venue. the UNL Lakefront Arena. It's not as big as the Smoothie King Center. But it's smaller. You can see better wherever you happen to be sitting. I don't know exactly what the capacity is, but this should be a really, really nice show. And Steely Dan has been performing a lot, lots of tours, and it's funny they disappeared because Becker left Steely Dan, and then Donald Fagen went on and did lots of great things, and Becker essentially dropped out.
But they're back together.
They got back together, I would think, about 1990 or so.
Okay. 297-5633, inkstershow@wrkf.org. A listener asks about Don McLean. I see that he's coming to Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge is getting Don McLean in August.
In August, like August 26th.
River Center Theater, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It's the same people who brought in Joan Baez a few years ago, and McLean, I know, doesn't do many interviews, and it'd be nice if he would do one here prior to his concert.
It would be nice if he did one with you and he did one with me.
There you go, and he would have it covered, right? But you talk about a guy who has a cult following, and for good reason. He's a real talent, although he has the most overplayed song in the history of music in American Pie. But he's done some great work independent of American Pie.
I have not followed Don McLean that closely throughout the years, but I have seen Don McLean in concert, and it didn't go well for Don that particular night.
Where was that?
It in Richmond, Virginia, my hometown. Don McLean was on a show with, as best I recall, Black Sabbath and Edgar Winter's White Trash. The year was about 72. Okay, so obviously, this is not a well-matched bill because Don McLean is essentially a contemporary folk singer, and he's going to sing his Vincent, which is a wonderful song, and American Pie. But the people at the show that night, they wanted to rock and roll.
So they didn't want to hear Don McLean
sing about poor Vincent Van Gogh.
Roberta Flack wrote her song, her big hit, Killing Me Softly, with his song about Don McLean. Did you know that?
You know what? I did not know that. You are a great source of info.
And I mentioned this with Roger Villery, who was on a few weeks ago, the chair of the Republican Party. Frankie Valli coming to the Sanger.
That's true.
Frankie Valli. I understand there's a huge ticket price on this, too. So there are people even older than you and me.
Even older than me.
Who are going to go in big numbers and pay top dollar to see 80-year-old Frankie Valli, the front man for the Four Seasons.
He is 80 years old.
80 years old, yes.
Well, I'm not surprised because he goes way, way back. So it's billed as Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Now, I doubt if there are any actual original Four Seasons there other than if you can include Frankie Valli as a Four Season. That'll be an interesting show. I wonder how much voice he's got at this point.
Well, I hear he's still got it, but at 80, we do slow down. At least that's what I hear.
I have to say I did not see the Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons movie, Jersey Boys. I did not see it.
Did you? I have not seen it, but people tell me it's a good film.
Okay.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash also coming to the Sanger.
Those guys are all in their 70s, have to be. They're a little bit younger than Frankie Valli.
Well, I think that's on the same night that Don McLean is coming to Baton Rouge, so people of a certain vintage will have to make a choice on that evening. But there always seems to be good music in this area. In fact, if you look up any city in America, including Los Angeles and New York, on any given weekend, there may be as strong a performance or performers, an array of performers in Baton Rouge and New Orleans as there are in those huge cities.
New Orleans has been especially active. It's been there's so many things going on. The Superdome, between the Superdome and the Smoothie King Center, there's a whole, and the Sanger Theater and the Mahalia Jackson Theater down there. It's an amazing amount of things going on a very high national level. And then, of course, you have all the local stuff that goes on in the clubs constantly. And we have our music scene here. Getting Don McLean compared to all the things they have there is a little bit, we're definitely out.
Well, before we let you go, the best films you've seen this year thus far?
I really like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
It's a big hit too.
And it deserves to be. It's better than I think anyone expected.
Why?
And the first film was called Rise of the. This is the relaunch of the Planet of the Apes. The first film was called Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and it was very good. But they have exceeded that by far with this new film called Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And I think anybody would like it. I think anyone who's interested in good movies and thrillers and exciting scenes, and it's quite an epic.
Well, a film like that, though, is unlikely to be Oscar material.
There may be a dark horse movement to nominate Andy Serkis. Andy Serkis plays Caesar. Caesar is the leader of this ape colony outside of San Francisco. And Caesar, it's a great performance by Andy Serkis, but it's a little complicated because his face is digitally created in large part.
Well, John, we thank you. As always, appreciate your comments. Today, by the way, would have been the 56th birthday of Ricky Stockner, my producer for 9 years. He passed away February of 2007.
Yes, I remember Ricky.
And from the Ricky Stockner Studios, his good friend John Wirt with us on his birthday. Thank you, John. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett is producing, and we have two fabulous ladies here who are involved in a major endeavor coming this way in our community next month, as in August 14th. It's the 4th Annual Brand Charity Golf Tournament, and this tournament is saluting veterans, as it has the first 3 years. 100% of the proceeds go to a charity and wounded soldiers in Louisiana and the Gulf South. And good morning to Pam Van Norman and Christy Kirby, and it's a noble endeavor for veterans. And let's begin with you, Christy, as far as the Combat Marine Outdoor Charity. Tell us a bit about this and why this is such an important endeavor for this organization.
Okay. It is a nonprofit organization dedicated to aiding in the rehabilitation of wounded servicemen and women recovering from traumatic injuries sustained in combat.
The mastermind behind the tournament, Danny Cavalier, Pam Van Norman, he obviously has a great passion for this particular organization and for veterans in general.
And it's to help, you know, the families and the injured servicemen and women, you know, get well, mm-hmm. you know, in their rehabilitation. It will take them out to do hunting and fishing trips.
Well, who are some of the veterans that will be there? Every year I know you showcase some. This year I'm sure is no exception.
Yes, Rusty Hicks will be there from Combat Marine Outdoors, and he will bring two or three veterans with him, two or three wounded soldiers that this charity has helped, and they will play in the tournament, and then we will honor two veterans at our award ceremony after the tournament, approximately 2:30.
Well, the tournament is at Pelican Point Country Club in Gonzales, and a four-man scramble is available. I know you still have some openings for people who might want to actually get out on the links.
Yes, they can contact me, and my number is 225-754-1121 if they would like to participate. We still need hole sponsors and door prizes.
You might want to give that number again.
225-754-1121.
And there are a lot of other activities that go on. You have a truly a cast of thousands and people from all walks of life who are really getting into this particular activity because, as stated, the proceeds go to a most worthy charity. Who are some of the other luminaries from our community who will be on hand?
Sheriff Wiley will be there, and we will have some volunteers from the Blue Star Moms, and we're looking, hopefully going to have some volunteers from the Military Order of Purple Hearts. I've spoken with Roland Doucet, and we're going to have plenty of food and drinks.
And I see as a prize you actually have at least one car?
We have four hole-in-ones. We have two on each course.
Yes. So what happens? If you make a hole-in-one?
They can win the car.
But if you don't make a hole-in-one?
You don't win the car.
Holes-in-one are pretty hard, but... What kind of car? Is this like a 58 Chevy?
I'm not sure what they're going to bring us the day of.
I would imagine it'll be a new car if you get a hole in one.
Definitely a new car.
Okay. Well, good luck. And once again, for those who wish to participate, best way to do so is to call you, Pam Van Norman, at
225-754-1121.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Christy Kirby. And good luck on August 14th at Pelican Point Country Club, the 4th Annual Brand Charity Golf Tournament.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And thanks for listening, everybody. Until tomorrow, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.